Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 96 of the Weekly Long Box. I'm Todd, joined as always with Leonard. How are you doing today, Leonard?
I'm doing good. We're a little late getting started here. Todd was out stealing HBO.
What?
You were climbing up the ladders, hooking up the wires.
Oh, yeah. That was changing light bulbs, so, you know, I have more ideas above my head. That's the way it looks good.
Remember when that was a thing? When you would get the illegal HBO box?
Oh, it was the best. Now, I remember even when they had the DirecTV circuit cards, the circuit boards that could get you everything for a little while until they sent the pulse that blasted it and it was no good anymore.
That's some real high-tech Star Trek-style stuff there. Just they sent a pulse wave.
Yes.
To get rid of all those. Like, luckily we live in an era where that's no longer a thing. But yeah, I was making that joke the other day to someone where it was a thing that you would just, like, there was no problem. It's like the guy would come to your house and hook up the illegal box. He'd climb up the pole.
Yeah.
And yeah. Simpler times.
Simpler, when thievery of electronics was easier.
That's right. Not like today.
How was your weekend?
Busy. I've been off for wrestling for this month. I have another two. Actually, I'm off this weekend, and then next weekend I have a show in Deptford, New Jersey. Is it Deptford? No, I can't remember. It's somewhere in New Jersey this next Sunday. But I've been keeping up on the football games.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
I haven't. I don't know.
No, I know you haven't.
No, but we've just been keeping the baby busy, taking him off, having all sorts of cool adventures.
Claws and paws and other things.
That's right. He's going to ride the train this weekend.
Ooh, that's cool. I had a busy weekend. I was on a monster cereal hunt.
Yeah, I saw that. Did you see General Mills tweeted me back for my remarks?
You are a superstar, Leonard.
I certainly am. My explanation for why Fruit Brute is the hipster of the General Mills cereal.
Give it to me.
All right. So here's why. Because Fruit Brute did not have the resurgence that, say, Yummy Mummy did. Yummy Mummy didn't come about until, like, the 90s, right?
Nope. They were all out at the same time, and Fruit Brute and Yummy Mummy went away in the 80s.
But then Yummy Mummy had a resurgence in, like, the late 80s, early 90s.
That I don't know. I don't have my Wikipedia.
No, the reason I know that is because that's when I was, like, really reading comic books heavy. That's when I really got into them, and all the books had Yummy Mummy ads in them.
Oh, okay.
And it was a big push that it was the return of this fourth monster, because I remember even in, this is like really down the rabbit hole before we even get into comics. We'll get into comics, I promise.
Yes.
Where the General Mills cereal, specifically the monster cereals, had a giveaway where it's like you find something or you do something and you get like the Sony Watchman TV.
Ooh, big time.
Okay. And I remember distinctly at the time there were only the three monsters. And that promotion had to have taken place in like the early to mid 80s. So Fruit Brute and Yummy Mummy were already gone. And I'm in front of a computer. I could very easily look this up, but I'd rather do this from memory. So Yummy Mummy got a little bit of a resurgence. Fruit Brute did not. Where Fruit Brute's resurgence came in was in the background of that one scene in Pulp Fiction.
Yep, that's what we talk about.
Right, right, right. So, it's not like that movie happened and then Yummy Mummy made a comeback, or Fruit Brute made a comeback. It hasn't been until, like, the last, like, 2 or 3 years, really, that they had both Fruit Brute and Yummy Mummy come back.
See, I thought it was just this year, but if...
Well, okay, I think it's been, like, within the last year or two.
Okay, I know they always have, they usually have the three, regular three ones at the Halloween, so that's
right, and
I
that's
know.
The thing, they have the regular three. And again, I could be wrong because I've never been a fruity cereal or like a very heavily sugared cereal person, even from way back as a kid. Nonetheless, because this is the first time that Fruit Brute is really making a comeback since I think almost like 1980, really.
Right.
That's the one that like everyone's like, man, Fruit Brute was my favorite, man. Like, I like that one better than all the other monster cereals. It's like, no, you're just saying that because like that's the cool one to say.
See, I'll be totally honest. Boo Berry is my favorite.
Yeah,
never tried Fruit Brute, so I want to. So I'm going to be honest. I'm not like, oh, it was my cereal in the day. I want to try Fruit Brute.
Boo Berry, like I said, not being a fruit, a fruity cereal or even the sugary cereal type person, Boo Berry is the best choice, I would say.
You're speaking to the choir, you know,
right.
Preaching to the choir. But so I picked all those up, and I also picked up Grand Theft Auto. I'm ready for that. So
my
one game, the game that I buy a system for, came out. So I saw
people complaining online that you have to buy like an extra flash drive or something for it.
I don't know. It takes up a lot of space, I heard. I haven't done anything yet, mm-hmm. so actually I'm probably waiting because I've had some good fortune recently and some money come into my hands. So I'm thinking I have to buy another TV, and mm-hmm. I won't be able to play it until I get another high-def TV. So it'll be a little bit before I give my review of the game.
So we both had some facts incorrect, so I was able to get the truth on this. The cereals debuted in 1971, but it was just Count Chocula and Frankenberry.
Mm-hmm.
In 73 was when Boo Berry was introduced, and then 74 was Fruit Brute. Fruit Brute was discontinued in 1984 and then replaced by Yummy Mummy.
Oh, wow.
Yummy Mummy was canceled in 93.
Wow.
So from 93 until 2010, it was only the big three.
So Boo Berry came out the same year I was born, so I'm a Boo Berry baby.
That's right, a Boo Berry baby.
Boo Berry baby.
And this year is actually the first time that all five cereals were re-released for the Halloween season.
Awesome, awesome. That was a lot of cereal talk.
Yeah, it was, to start off the show, but I didn't know that I was with you. I thought that there was a time where both Fruit Brute and Yummy Mummy existed at the same time, but they did not.
See, we give all kinds of knowledge, just not comic book knowledge.
But do we have some comic book knowledge this week?
Yes, we do. We actually have some comic book news, not just cereal news. we have some TV news. Two kinds of TV news. We also have new Marvel books, and also what's coming at Christmas. We also have our sales, our digital sales, and con news, because we're trying to push the con news again.
I feel bad that we didn't mention it last week, so I'm making a much more concerted effort to make sure we get to it this week.
Mm-hmm. What we read last week, like a Walking Dead and a bunch of the villains books we'll go over.
Right, we have a bunch of things to talk about there. Yeah, I have questions to ask you about the villains books, and there's a reason for that, of course.
Okay, what we're looking forward to this week, also the Twitter question, which is what was your favorite universe?
We got a lot of cool choices. Nothing I was too surprised about, to be honest with you, though.
Me either. I'm looking over it, and I don't see mine, so that's cool. So the list of answers. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that should be interesting. So where do you want to start?
Let's start. Let me look at the news one more time. Let's talk about the TV stuff first.
Okay.
There's going to be a second Walking Dead TV show.
Yes, there is.
And I didn't know how I felt about that at first.
Mm-hmm.
But then reading up a little bit more on it, I saw that it's not going to be on for at least another year or two, at the very least 2 years. And it's going to be more along the lines of, here's some other characters that are doing things in this same universe and that they're probably not going to cross over. But they probably will cross over at some point.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Right. But this is just, I don't blame them. It is, like, the number one show when Entertainment Weekly has their fall schedule issue come out. The number one show that gets the most coverage is Walking Dead. So if you could have two shows that are getting just as much coverage, then hey, let's do that. And I think Breaking Bad is ending soon, so we need to get something to replace it.
Yeah, two or three episodes, I think, for Breaking Bad. But my take on it is I think it's really interesting. I think it would be cool if they went with... I was just thinking, as a fanboy dream, that if it was Negan's group would be awesome. That way, while we still have these governor storylines tying up for the next year or so, you could set up Negan's group, which, is in the current storyline, and you would have them established instead of them coming out of nowhere, kind of the way the governor did. So it wouldn't feel as the same as, another threat out of nowhere. And I think that would be really cool, but I don't know if they'd do that.
I think Negan would be a good one to do, but I also think that maybe you know, it's new characters, or maybe that's what you do with the governor. I think this season, even though the governor is kind of sort of separate, they said that there's going to be a couple episodes that are going to be like, hey, here's what the governor's up to. And I can maybe see that as being the test to see if the governor can carry his own show.
Right.
Or if it is just going to be new characters, or is just the tracking of the name The Walking Dead going to be enough for it to sustain two shows?
Yeah. I look at it that way. I mean, I think it just being zombies alone, regardless, in the same universe is going to be enough to... I think people will eat it up. I don't think it'll dilute it too much. I think, but that's it. That's your level. You can't get too crazy. Maybe a Saturday morning cartoon, and that'd be about it. And then you're done. Maybe a monster cereal.
Maybe a there you go. Now that's where the money's at, really, in breakfast cereals. We spent the first 40 minutes of the show talking about it. But obviously, I would assume that they would run not at the same time, of course. You know, one would run for their 13 episodes, say, October to February, and then the other one maybe, like, during the summer. Like, we have very little information other than the fact that there's going to be another one.
Right. That would be a great idea, but I wouldn't put it past them to do a double block.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Just because it's one of those shows that it starts up at Halloween around con time. I guess if you started one during San Diego or ended it at San Diego, but con time. But I don't know. I could see them doing a double block and just owning Sunday night, just having huge ratings and selling, you know, commercials for lots of money. But like you said, we don't have much information. I'm all for it. I like the fact that Kirkman's going to get some extra, you know, drachmas in his pocket from this. And it could be fun because it'll all be all new characters and you won't have any preconceived notions going in. Like, you know, where I watched some of this season, I'm like, oh, I didn't like what they did. I liked it more in the book occasionally, not every time. But with this, you're like, what do you got? You got nothing as long as it's all new characters. So that could be cool.
Now, what I can also see them possibly doing is, I know that you said just owning Sunday night, I could definitely have them see them having the end of the main show roll right in, like the season finale of the main show be on the same night as the premiere of the new show and do the block like that.
Gotcha. That'd be a great idea, yeah. And it'd have to be, that would be somewhere around, if I do my math correctly, like Sweeps Week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like have the finale during Sweeps Week, which is, I think, February.
Yes.
Something like that, which would be, you know, because you're going to have that gap in the middle probably, like yeah, they always do. End it, and then you have your double whammy of one ending, one starting, and just watch the, you know, the ratings go through the roof.
That's but Sweeps Week is, like, on the networks, like, that's a thing. But, you know, it's Sweeps Weeks. Like, nobody watches things live, really. Everyone watches everything DVR'd or at least a couple minutes behind. And I think the DVR math, if you watch it within the first, like, 72 hours of its initial airing, it counts for those original ratings.
Well, then there you go, though. I mean, that's still what they kind of go by. Mm-hmm. So you want to have that there. So that would be great. You know, even if you didn't watch it live, you watched it because I usually watch Walking Dead live, but occasionally I have to watch it, you know, with I don't have the DVR, I have the on-demand, so it's pretty much the same thing, and they have those up literally the next day. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know what time they go up. Like, if I miss it that night and I don't feel like watching the midnight showing or the 1 o'clock showing after The Talking Dead, I'll just wait till the next day and go to it after work, and it'll be there. I'm not sure what time it goes up, but so that's cool.
So the other casting news, the other TV show news, and this one is, as far as I could tell, definitely being spun out, that they've cast someone to play the Barry Allen Flash in the CW DC universe with Smallville and Arrow, which is currently on. Someone from the TV show Glee by the name of Grant Gustin. He's going to be on a couple episodes of Arrow, see how that does, and then that's going to spin out into the Flash TV show if it does well.
That's cool. I haven't watched any of Arrow. Have you?
No, I had many intentions to do so, and then I heard such mixed things. It was so polarizing. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't fit it into my schedule. But I will be watching the Flash episodes.
I will definitely. I've really haven't heard anything bad or, like you said, mixed. The couple of people who I know who watched it all loved it. So I did want to watch it, but once it got so far, I don't have DVR. Like I said, I have the on-demand, and after like 4 weeks, they go out of rotation. or so. It depends on the show. So I missed the first couple, and by the time I got around to it, they were gone. So, but I would try it. I would definitely. I know I'm going to try the Flash episodes because I'm a huge Flash fan. But I could see me getting into it.
Right, and who knows? Like, the Flash episodes could make us Arrow fans, and that's just another show to throw in the pile. I know next week starts the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show.
Yes, yes, it does. We have to discuss how we're doing that.
We're going to have to discuss, because isn't it on Tuesday nights?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Tuesday nights.
Yes, Tuesday nights. So we're going to be a week behind on those. So I think we could... I think when that comes up, we'll be able to talk freely about them, because by the time we talk about them, the shows will be like a week old, you know?
Right, right. But what if somebody's waiting for the DVDs?
Mm-hmm. They'll get over it.
Okay.
So the other bit of news, I guess, to talk about is the December solicitations are out. Tons of stuff from Marvel. Scarlet Spider is also being canceled the month prior. Venom got canceled very quietly. This one is not quiet. This is, you know, very clearly saying that it's over. You know, Kane did his best to be a hero and he failed. So there's some other Spider-Man stuff. There's other books where their solicitations make it seem like they're ending, like X-Men Legacy. All the Inhuman stuff is starting. And I'm thinking with the beginning of the year, with all the Marvel Now 2 stuff, I'm sure a lot of those books will be getting relaunched, or there might be like a Spider-Man family book that it's like a Venom Scarlet Spider team up. Who knows what's going to happen, but I don't think that's the end of these books. I know people have lamented, it's like, man, I just got somebody into Scarlet Spider, I just got somebody into Venom, and now they're canceling it. And I'm like, hold your horses, they're ending this arc, it'll be relaunched within the next couple months, don't worry about it.
You know what, I was just thinking the other day too, I was talking to somebody and I was like, you know what, like, to get Marvel more books, they have this whole thing with the Ultimate Universe might be destroyed, blah blah blah. And I was wondering if they would actually pull the trigger on the Marvel the Ultimate Universe with Galactus over there just to free up like a few more spaces for more Marvel books. Maybe, like, the Ultimate Universe has passed its prime and, you know, now you could have two more Wolverine books, two more, well, however many books they have over there, two more Spider-Man, two more Superior Spider-Man books, I'm sorry, stuff like that. I think that, the more I think about, like, the rumors, I think they would do it just so they could have, like, Marvel Now 2 and 3 down the line.
I don't know. I don't think Marvel is as steadfast as, like, here's the number of books that we need to publish a month. As DC seems to be, where they're like, we have to have our 52 in-continuity universe books every month, and, like, this is the first time, like, within the last, I think last month was maybe the first time that they shipped under, or maybe next month is the next time, the first time they're shipping under the 52 number. Mm-hmm. But I do understand what you're saying, that maybe whatever slot the Ultimate Universe books are taking up, maybe that could go to a better property. There's a lot of rumors of what's going to happen to those characters, and maybe we've already started to see some of them pop up in the Marvel Universe. So it'll be very interesting to see. But I can definitely see the Ultimate Universe kind of being no more by the time 2014 rolls around.
Me too.
Which is sad, you know, because I know there's a lot of people that got into comics, and I have a lot of fond memories of those early Ultimate Spider-Man books.
Mm-hmm.
From Bendis, yeah.
The early Ultimate FFs were amazing, too, so... Mm-hmm. You know, I liked a lot of what was going on back then, but, you know, the whole point of the thing was to bring in new readers and you know, have a jumping on point. Now it's 12 years later, you know what I mean? So, I don't know. I could see it happening. And it did kickstart most of the Marvel movies, because that was the template.
Right, the look of them and a lot of that sort of thing was based on those movies, yeah, or those books, rather.
So, but either way, we'll see. We'll stay tuned, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing that came out of the solicitations in the month of December is it is a five Wednesday month, but one of those Wednesdays is Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think most shops are going to be open on Christmas Day.
I think ours will be.
Really?
No, it won't.
Oh, my goodness. I was going to say that would be awesome if he was.
Yeah, I'll have to talk to him. I'll have to put the requisition in to see if it happens.
but that's the thing, though. That week, because it's such a weird shipping week, and a lot of people, I'm sure, will be going to the shops that Thursday to pick up their books, and they'll have a lot of their pockets will be fat with cash from Christmas. There is tons of big books, new number ones that are all coming out. Like, every company has one book or two books maybe that are coming out. DC has Forever Evil coming out. Marvel has the first of the Avengers Now 2 stuff out of out of Infinity into Inhuman, where it's going to have the digital code to get like the first couple issues and trade sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It's also going to have Wolverine Origin 2. I think they're the only one that have like a double shipping book. Dynamite has a Robotech Voltron crossover. IDW has a Doctor Who special, which I think is going to be their last Doctor Who book probably.
It would be close if not.
Yeah.
No, it would have to. Well, you'd have one more Wednesday, which would be New Year's Day. So,
Image has the new James Robinson book that he's doing for them called Saviors. So everyone has one book coming out that week. Still go to your shop the day after Christmas. And if your store is open on Christmas Day, please go to your shop on Christmas Day.
Yes. Let us know.
Which makes me wonder, are we doing a show that week?
Christmas Eve is Tuesday night, and Wednesday is Christmas Day?
That's correct.
I think I could do a show. It just depends on what time. I don't like my family, so...
Oh, boy.
No, I'm just kidding. I'd be able to work around. We'll have to discuss. But the thing that I think would be more interesting is the week after. Are we doing a New Year's Eve show?
Yeah.
Okay, but what I mean is, I think we should party and do a New Year's Eve show.
We'll have to check with our sponsors to see if they'll allow us to wreak such havoc, but I'm not 100% sure about that one.
But by, I mean soda and pie, have a party. But anyway.
No, I'm an old man. I go to bed early on New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve is not a party day for me.
See, I'm all warmed up still after Baltimore. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, you're just getting your sea legs back after being on the harbor.
Yeah, my sea legs.
That's right.
Yeah, but we'll see. We'll talk.
So, so if your store's open on Christmas Day, definitely check them out. Whether we're going to be doing shows that week, we will. It'll be just very interesting to see when we're going to record those. Mm-hmm. So, other than that, in the news, I do want to mention that there's two conventions this weekend.
Two conventions, yes.
This weekend, starting on Thursday? No, Friday. This is only a three-dayer. Wizard World has Ohio Comic-Con in the Greater Columbus Convention Center. And the usual cast of characters are going to be there, like almost the entire cast of The Walking Dead is going to be there. Your Stan Lees, your William Shatners, your Lou Ferrigno's, but they have some good comic guests there as well. Humberto Ramos is going to be there, Derek Roberts, Neil Adams, Patrick Gleason, Mike McCone is going to be there. Jet setting Mike McCone will be there.
Yes.
So check that one out if you are in the Midwest. And if you are out on the West Coast, go check out Rose City Comic Con. Actually, I heard about it today. It's at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. And I just heard about it today, and I'm like, oh, this is a small con. I didn't hear much about this. And then I looked at the guest list, and I'm like, why am I not hearing more about this con? Cullen Bunn, Kurt Busiek, Kelly Sue DeConnick is going to be there. Matt Fraction is going to be there because there's so many people that live in the Oregon area. Adam Hughes is going to be there. Joe Kelly is going to be there. Carl Kessel is going to be there. And Aaron Lopresti is going to be there. The guys who do Axe Cop, Ethan Nicole is going to be there. Jeff Parker. Tons and tons of people. Greg Rucka, Tim Seeley, Tim Sale. The list goes on and on. This is a huge convention, and it's getting like absolutely no press whatsoever.
Wow. It's not like, other than you putting it in the show notes, I've heard nothing. And I mean, I try to stay on top of who's going where, because you never know when you want to sketch or somebody's going, or you want an exclusive or something like that. But I haven't heard anything.
So, yeah, tons of great creators there. So if you are in the Oregon area, definitely check that one out. I know they usually do. That's where Emerald City is, but that's usually like February or March. So this is a nice little end of the fall, beginning of the winter con to check out there if you're out in that neck of the woods. Some other things to check out would be our digital stuff. And again, we have anything to do with it. We just tell you that it exists. The free books that are available this week from Marvel. is Matt Fraction's Defenders number one, that run that he did just about 2-3 years ago, which again is a repeat of a freebie, but if you missed it the first time, it's here again. Daredevil number 16. And I know Todd will have you believe that Daredevil is a brand new character created by Mark Waid, but alas, he is not. He has been around for quite a long time, and this issue's significance is it's the first ever issue of Daredevil written by Brian Michael Bendis. Oh. So that's history, if you will. Mm-hmm. And the other book is Fantastic Four number 347, and the only reason I know exactly what this is the first Walt Simonson issue where it was the new Fantastic Four, where it was just a blatant cash grab, and the team was Wolverine, the Hulk, Ghost Rider, and Spider-Man.
That was Adam Hughes, or no, not Adam Hughes, Art Adams, right?
Yes, it was Walt Simonson writing Art Adams' art.
That was I think everybody at that time who was collecting comics has those issues.
Yep.
Every time a collection comes in the shop around that time, there's those Fantastic Four issues, even if there's none before it or after.
Well, it worked. You know,
it did.
It was a cash grab, and people bought them.
And it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I say pick it up.
Definitely check it out. It's free. Definitely check it out. Now,
free.
Some sales that are going on. IDW is having their recent relaunch of G.I. Joe on sale. I think it's like the first four issues of All Little Stories they have. There's G.I. Joe, mm-hmm. G.I. Joe Special Missions, and so on and so forth. And the main G.I. Joe book is written by Fred Van Lente, who's a great, great writer. And it's a fun take on G.I. Joe, but it's also serious at the same time. If you're a fan of the cartoon, a fan of the old comics, there's a lot of that to fall back on there. So those are on sale. But Valiant is having a huge sale. They have over 200 books on sale, and it's current stuff and older stuff, and it's pretty much everything. It's everything, I think, up to what came out this month. And the reason I know that is because Quantum and Woody 3 came out last week?
Yes.
The first two issues are on sale for 99 cents.
No, that's a good deal.
Right. So I was wishing issue 3 was on there for sale, but then I was wishing that it wasn't because I'm like, I just bought it for full price. But there's tons and tons of stuff there. Check out Archer and Armstrong. That's also by Fred Van Lente. That's very, very good. The first issue of his Eternal Warrior, or actually Greg Pak's Eternal Warrior, kind of ties into everything that's going on in Archer and Armstrong. That's the only Valiant book that's not up because the first issue of that just came out a week or two ago. But that Valiant sale is over the weekend, too. So if you don't have the money right now, definitely keep your eyes peeled, and there is tons of great stuff. I highly recommend getting the first two issues of Quantum and Woody, or even buy the whole run of the original Quantum and Woody series like I did when it was on sale many, many moons ago.
Yeah, can't beat that run.
Cannot beat that run, indeed. So I've talked quite a bit here, but I do have one more thing to say before we get into the meat of the show, and that is what we had read last week, and that would be talking about our good friends at File Transporter. They offer to you a private cloud device. You don't have to worry about the ether of the cloud. It's a device that you have sitting in your home that you control. Unlimited sharing, no recurring fees, hidden costs, you know, no subscription that you have to worry about or why money came out of your PayPal account without being noticed. You pay your one-time shot, you got it, you're good to go. Your data is always protected, automatically backed up. You don't have to remind yourself to do so. And you can get data with any 2.5-inch hard drive as small as, you know, like 500 meg, all the way up to 2 terabytes. And that is a lot of information. And it's a great way to sync all your files between all your digital devices because you can get apps, whether you have iOS, whether you have Google Play, Android, whatever, you can use the transporter, download the app, access your files anywhere on the go. It's a great device. They're a great sponsor of ours, so please check them out.
Yes, and if you'd like to check them out, go to filetransporter.com/longbox. You can look around, see they have a bunch of information, see how it works. If you're looking to purchase, click on buy. Go to the connected data link, which is the people who make it, click on that, and at checkout, put in Longbox for 10% off your entire order,
yes,
which is a good deal.
Yes, indeed. 10%, hey, any money that you can save anywhere in this day and age to keep that peace of mind of all your files, everything's on your computer these days, let File Transporter help you protect your data. So that covers the plug for our good sponsor. That covers the weekly digital stuff, the sales, the freebies, and so forth, the news. Todd, where would you like to begin with the books that we read from this past week?
Let's start with something I doubt anybody has. Ooh. It's exclusive. It's how about the first issue of Letter 44?
Letter 44? Todd, that's a book that doesn't come out until October. How did you get it?
I have a little stroke with the writer, Mr. Charles Soule. By stroke, I mean I met him at a con and he was willing to take my money for an early copy, which was the San Diego exclusive.
Right, and I think whatever con he's going to be at up until the book comes out, which might be New York, which might be the week that the book comes out, I'm not sure the exact date in October. Right. I don't have that information readily in front of me. I'm sorry.
You're okay. It's okay. You had lots of monster news, so we're good.
Yes, indeed. So, so Letter 44, Oni Press, comes out in October, and it's Alberto Albuquerque. And this is not like Raphael Albuquerque, who does American Vampire and is going to be doing Animal Man. This is Alberto. And it's a sci-fi story involving the presidency and aliens and all sorts of cool stuff. What did you think of this?
I really liked it. Early on, you know, we're getting the how it works, how everything's going on. The basic gist of the story is a guy's coming in to be president. And it's the president usually leaves a letter for the next president, and he leaves it, and there's a bomb dropped in it. And I really enjoyed it. I love the book. I thought it was a little slow in the beginning, but as we got towards the end, it picked up pace. There was a couple of revelations with the astronauts that kind of – I was like, okay, we're here. What's going on? I'm not sure. This makes me want to know more. And then there's a shot where, like, you know, a certain astronaut they pan back, and I'm like, okay – That's big. I want to know how that happened. But all around, it does what it's supposed to do. So first issue gets you all the information that you need, leaves mysteries that you want to know more about, and I think he did a great job on it.
Right, and I'm in agreement with you. I wonder if the title of the book, being Letter 44, and, you know, as Todd mentioned, the outgoing president leaves a letter for the incoming president in this, and he is the 44th president in this little universe of the world. And there's some allegories kind of played toward the, you know, things that have been going on in politics in the United States over the last 10 or 15 years in this book. But instead of having them be in the Middle East and so forth, it's in space. And there's, you know, there's information that's in the solicitation that there's something in an asteroid belt. And they sent this crew of military and science people out to investigate it. And it's going to be essentially, it appears to be two stories that are going to be going on concurrently. One, the folks up in space, and then, of course, the president trying to piece together this mystery and get more information out there and get the information out to the people. Mm-hmm. Which seems to be his goal. And I like this very much. I didn't feel it was that slow, to be honest with you. It was very wordy. And I think it's just because most of Charles Soule's stuff that I've read so far is much more superhero-y.
You know what? That's definitely a better definition than slow, is wordy.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, oh my God, I was bored. I just meant I enjoyed it. I was like, okay, there's a lot of setting up here, what the last president did in his term. And, you know, it's a president reading a letter, but they do a good job of it. You know what I mean? So it's not like I was completely bored. It's just like, okay, then, the more revelations come, the more interesting it gets. I mean, like you're saying, he wants to get the news out there. I'm going to guess that there's some people who don't want him to get the news out there, and we can, like, have stuff from that and the astronauts and see how it all works is going to be very interesting.
Right, and I also wanted to mention, as we've, I was tweeting about it the other day, the art in this, obviously it's all black and white in the ash can, the preview that we got. Now, I'd be very interested to see what if it's going to be a book that's in color or if it how it is going to be colored, because the art reminded me very much of Steve Scrooge's art.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Scrooge was an artist in the late 90s, early 2000s. He did a lot of stuff for Marvel. He did one of the Spider-Man books. He did some X-Men and Wolverine stuff, most notably. And then Todd and some other folks were nice enough to point out online that he is working with the Wachowskis now, doing, like, storyboarding stuff for them. And I'm sure that pays a couple shekels to keep a tin roof on his shack.
Yes, it does.
Yes. So I'm sad to see him no longer doing comics, but I don't think I've thought of Steve Scrooge's art in forever, and this book reminded me so much and made me miss his art so much.
Mm-hmm. You actually unleashed like old memories, because I don't even really think I picked up anything back in the day by him, so I was like, oh, Steve Scrooge, there's a name, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm with you. It's just the past. But good stuff.
Good stuff indeed. So just continuing on here with books that we read from last week, I'd like to talk about Astro City number 4 by Kurt Busiek with art by Brent Anderson. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Continuing of Astro City, having this little, you know, the return of Astro City after being away for so many years. And I know when the first issue had come back, Todd had wondered aloud on this very show, can you go home again? And we both said, you can. And this book, I think, does a very good job of this. I thought that this not only was the best of the first 4 issues, but a top contender for maybe one of the best Astro City stories ever. I really like this story a lot.
Okay, I would disagree with you on the best story, like one of the best stories of Astro City. But I really liked it. I'm not going to take that away from you. I think I liked the JLA, I call it the Justice League operator story better.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this is still like a really great story. But of the 4, I like the 2 issues of that one. But it's an interesting take on it. You know, people who use their powers, everybody thinks, you know, you have 2 choices, villain or hero. And these are people who use their powers in you know, everyday life. And I thought that was a really cool angle on it. Something that Kurt Busiek is really good at with Astro City is taking, you know, superhero comics and doing stuff nobody's done with it before. And I thought that was really cool.
Right, and I liked to see the progression of our lead character, Maddie Sullivan, how, you know, she weighed her options. It's not like she found out that she had these powers. She had, you know, a telekinetic sort of power. And, you know, she tried being a hero. She tried being a villain. And, you know, we find this world of people that live within Astro City who have powers but do other things with them than mm-hmm. be superheroes or supervillains. And just as is always the case with Astro City, I'm sure these people will come up again.
Yes. And you know what I like, too, is to every once in a while to see an old-school comic book villain, which you don't see much, like, you know, the whole over-the-topness.
Yes.
And as I was reading this, there's one in here, and I'm like, God, I remember reading stuff like this when I was younger. And I didn't laugh in any way, shape, or form. It brought back, you know, like good memories of, like, over-the-top monologuing villains. And I was like, this is so cool. I'm like, Kurt Busiek just walks that tightrope perfectly.
And I think one of the last times that there was a villain of that, you know, of that ilk was maybe during his Avengers run. You know, way back in, like, the, you know, up when he had finished that up in the early to mid-2000s.
Mm-hmm.
That was when there was a definite shift in the world of comic books to kind of get away from that sort of villain.
Yep.
And I miss that sort of villain.
I do, too.
Yes.
So fun. But can't recommend Astro City enough.
No, I can't. And you know, it's one of those books where you could very easily just hop on any issue and you'll be fine.
Yep. Totally.
You don't have to worry about being lost. You don't have to worry about, well, I don't understand what these people are. You know, like when the Samaritan shows up, there's no question who he is and why he's there.
Right. He does a good job of establishing by the people's reaction.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You're like, even if you don't know, you're like, this guy's important. You know?
Like, do you need to know his backstory? Do you need to know, you know, about his, like, devices that he has and all that sort of stuff? Nope. You just need to know he's this world's essential Superman analog. Everyone reacts in kind, and that's all you need to know. And it does a great job. A great job.
Yep.
So one of the other books I want to talk about here as well is Red Sonja number 3 from Dynamite Studios, written by Gail Simone, with art by Walter Giovanni, and continuing the tradition of the show of not pronouncing artists' names correctly. I'm sure that's about as close as we're going to get on here. But this is more so an origin story of this Red Sonja. Now, you're more of the Conan sword and sorcery type person than I am.
Mm-hmm.
As I know that you've recently traded in your sack of Conans for, I think, a cool wet sack of Conans.
A box.
Wow. Oh my goodness. Is it an actual like comic long box or short box?
It's a comic short box.
Oh,
an actual
man.
Off the, you know, a from Comics on the Green short box. Folded and everything.
So have you read Red Sonja stories in your Conan reading days?
No, because of the fact that when I read Conan, which he's at Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm.
So Dark Horse does not have the rights to Red Sonja. So they were doing new stories and were not allowed to use her at all. So they did put out the Conan like archives, which were the Marvel Conans, which I'm pretty sure is where she was created.
Mm.
She wasn't created by the guy. I could be wrong. I'm looking that up now. But I think she was created by Roy Thomas because he was writing the Conans at Marvel. So, yeah, I never really got to read any Red Sonja because they never had the rights to her at the time I was reading it.
Gotcha. No, because I was just wondering if this plays into her origin. I don't know how much of her origin you actually know, if any.
None. I actually know none.
So, both of us being noobs, as it were, to the Red Sonja verse, I thought this was a very good issue. I thought this was a very good telling of her origin. And I wonder if any of our listeners out there are Red Sonja or Conan aficionados and know the story of Red Sonja and how much of a take off of that this is.
I'm looking it up now, and it says that Red Sonja was created by Roy Thomas and Barry Windsor Smith in Conan, but is loosely based on Red Sonja, spelled differently, based on Red Sonja from a short story. So, according to Wikipedia, which, you know, is always 100% accurate, creators are Robert E. Howard name, but created by Roy Thomas and Barry Windsor Smith. So,
gotcha.
That's interesting. But I didn't read her origin. And all that. Don't want to, you know, take the time. But, yeah, so I don't know anything about it either.
But what did you think of this issue? What did you think of this origin?
I liked it. I mean, it falls into the, you know, typical hero of that ilk. You know, the take no crap kind of, like, I equated to the Conans and the Jonah Hexes. I liked it. I thought it was a good origin. I like Red Sonja as a book, but I don't love it. So it's kind of on the edge right now.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man, because I really like it. I've really been digging the first couple issues, and I thought this, like I said, was a great issue. And, you know, more information about the character and more reason to stick with her, if you will.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't know. I'm at max capacity, and this is one of those books that I like, but I don't love, and I have to make some harsh decisions. We'll see.
No, you know what? I made some, I tweeted about a week or so ago. I'd made some huge cuts to my list. And, you know, obviously my list is all the way up to December of stuff. And obviously stuff doesn't ship every month. And, you know, some books are going to be ending in October and November that I read. But my list is under 50 books as of right now.
I'm with you. I have to look over. I keep forgetting to do it. But I love like the Shadow at Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm starting to joke that the Shadow is becoming Dynamite's Wolverine.
Oh yeah,
that he's in everything. And I'm like, I don't know how he's gonna be, but they're gonna get him in Battlestar Galactica somehow.
Wasn't there the new team up book that came out from Dynamite this past week? It was like, I know it's definitely Flash Gordon. I know it's definitely...
Oh, no, it's Mandrake the Magician,
okay.
Flash Gordon, and Flash Gordon, Mandrake, and the Phantom.
And
I can't remember what they're called. There's a name for those heroes.
Like, the King's Watch.
I think it's the King's Heroes, because that was the company. But no, I didn't pick that one up.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that one was on your radar or not.
No.
But yeah, so the sad to see the Shadow go, and I'll be sad to see you drop Red Sonja if you do.
Right, I might just tweak it down to one Shadow book, but you know, because I've been enjoying it, but they're starting to get a little crazy to get my money, so we'll have to see.
So rounding things out here is going to be some Villains Month talk, starting off with the book that you were most looking forward to this past week, which is Justice League 23.2:Lobo number 1.
Yes.
Written by Marguerite Bennett with art by Ben Oliver and having a fancy 3D cover.
Yes. What did you think?
I liked it. I didn't love it. It was interesting as a concept. Mm-hmm. I think they very easily could have done this with a new character, perhaps, as opposed to changing Lobo. But I didn't have a ton of attachment to Lobo, so I'm okay with that. I like the design of the new Lobo. I don't think it's metrosexual or whatever it is. And the premise of what he's going to be doing, I like. Without, you know, giving away too much, I'm sure a lot of people know, but far be it from us to be the ones that actually spoil this. But I do have one concern about it, but I'll get to my concern once you tell me what your thoughts are.
I think I like this more than you, mm-hmm. but then again, I you know, have that love for Lobo back from the Legion 89 run and his, you know, appearing in Justice League. So I was like, oh, they're going to change him. But when he showed up, I genuinely thought he was cool. He was like, you know, Lobo was a tank back in the day. This one's more vicious, more calculating. I kind of like that. I'm open to the idea of what they're doing with the whole what he's after, because I think you can actually revert that at any point if you wanted to. There's no problem with that. But I enjoyed it. I like some of this, you know, stuff. You thought maybe he was gonna be a nicer guy at one point and not so much, but I think maybe because my expectations were so low, I really liked it. The only thing that I didn't like about it was they pushed really hard to give him like this catchphrase thing with the good, not good, I think it was. Was that it?
Yeah.
He kept saying that over and over again, and I'm like, because the old Lobo had like bastage and frag and stuff like that, I think they're trying to give him something, mm-hmm. and I just don't think that worked. That took me out of it. Not out of the book, but I was like, that's not working. Let that go. But otherwise, I enjoyed Lobo.
So, like I said, I enjoyed it too, but like I said, I didn't love it only because in the back of my head, while they set up an interesting premise for the character, an interesting mission, I guess, mm-hmm. For Lobo to go on. My question is where does he go from here? Is he getting his own book? Is Marguerite Bennett staying on the book to continue the vision of this character? Is he going to be just popping up on other books? That's where my concern is. It seems like they might have done this without a real end game.
Okay.
Yeah. That's my only concern.
My thing is, I'm with you. But he's in Stormwatch right now, so I don't know if, like the other, the Lobo, so I don't know if they're going to continue this storyline in Stormwatch, which I guess they would because Lobo's in that, but whether or not Jim Starlin's going to still be writing it or they can take the writer from Lobo, but that's where I'd guess they do it. Because actually, as we're talking about these Villain Month books, a lot of these Villain Month books, even though they have the names on the covers, you know, like Lobo is Justice League, this one, and, you know, Deadshot was a Justice League, and Harley Quinn was a detective. They're really not, because, like, the Harley and the Deadshot were like, hey, this is what happened at the end of Suicide Squad. You read the story at the end. Mm-hmm. If you want to read more, read Suicide Squad issue 24. And I'm like, wait, these are detective books and Justice League books. I guess hopefully it'll bring, if somebody, you know, they're buying the big books for it, it'll bring their eyes to it. So I get it. But, like, you know, that they have no rhyme or reason sometimes.
Right. And we had talked about that, I think, when these books were initially announced way back when, and now that they're actually out, like, the first week of September, Batman the Dark Knight 23.1, The Ventriloquist, is actually a Batgirl story.
Yes.
And it continues in Batgirl. I know that, you know, Batman 23.2 with the Riddler that came out this past week, that actually does fit into what's going on currently in the Batman book written by Scott Snyder.
Right.
You had mentioned, now, I know the Black Manta book, kind of, it takes place during the most recent issue of Aquaman, it takes place during the most recent Forever Evil. Like, it's taking place as that's going on.
Right.
And then it kind of ties in more so to Suicide Squad than anything else. Or maybe the new Argus miniseries that's coming out in less Aquaman.
Right. When I was reading Black Manta, a bunch of these issues start with, because if you've read Forever Evil, you know they were having the big villain meeting, which, you know, is no spoiler.
The big creator summit.
Right. Creators. But a lot of these that I have read start because some of them are in jail at the Belle Reve. I don't know how to say it.
I would say Belle Reve isn't good enough. Yeah.
Belle Reve prison. So that's where Suicide Squad comes out of. But that's obviously where they left Black Manta in the Aquaman issues. So you actually see, like, in a bunch of these, the prison break at Belle Reve from different angles. Mm-hmm. So technically they're not Suicide Squad books, but the Deadpool, Justice League, and the Harley definitely are. Like, they're straight up leading into it.
So you had read a couple of the other ones that I did not, specifically mm-hmm. the Court of Owls one?
Yes, the Court of Owls was really good if you're a fan of the characters of the court. Like, you know, just the regular everyday people who wear the mask, who you're not sure who they are, who run them. And it's basically a story of this guy who's running the Court of Owls, I guess, and his daughter saying, "Forever Evil is happening. We do what we always do. We dig in, and we are the city." And that he proceeds to tell his daughter the history of the Court of Owls. And if you're reading Talon, there's some stuff in there that that you get. You're obviously a character show up that we've seen, you know, in flashbacks before in the past, way in the past, like in, you know, the 1800s and stuff. And as it goes, we learn all about a lot more about the court. And I thought that was really cool. And then they're after something to help them against Forever Evil, which I'm really looking forward to see how they're using it. And I've really been loving the Talon books, and this comes right out of it. And it's just creepy and nasty and really good.
Now, I'd given up on Talon a little whiles back only because it felt like it was a bat book that kind of wasn't fitting in. And I felt like Snyder told a good story with the Court of Owls, and I didn't really think there was much more to tell beyond what was being attempted to be told in the Talon book. But I'm glad to see that it's still good. I'm sad that I'm not reading it. But it does make sense that the Batman and Robin Court of Owls book is more of a Talon book because of the creative team. You said that you also read the Earth 2 Solomon Grundy book.
Yes, that one was really good. That one was a quick read. Mm-hmm. I believe that was Matt Kint was doing that one, who I'm slowly becoming a big-time fan of.
Oh, okay.
He did that, and he did the Deadshot one, which was really good. I'm trying to remember if he did any other ones, because the thing that I don't like before I get into the book is that they don't have any of the names on the covers.
Right, the creative teams, yeah.
Right, which I guess they had to do because they had to have the 3D covers made before they even, for the 3D versions, in time. So that's the problem, remembering who did what. But the Solomon Grundy one is interesting because I don't know, you did you read Earth 2 at all?
I did. I read the first story arc, and I did like the Solomon Grundy portrayal in it. Right. But after they work together, they stop Solomon Grundy from doing what he's doing, and then it's like, well, we got to get back to fighting each other. And I'm just like, aw, come on, stop fighting.
Yeah. This is a nice nod to the old Solomon Grundy, which I think is one of those things that Earth 2 did really well under James Robinson. And if Matt Kint is the new writer, I think he's might even do, you know, just as good of a job. You know, it's one of those that Slaughter Swamp is involved and stuff's going on. But in the end, it's different enough and really creepy. And obviously now that the Solomon Grundy is part of the rot of Earth 2, you know, which was when an Animal Man and Swamp Thing. And I just really enjoyed it. And they did a couple other things, once again, which, you know, these books are supposed to do, is like, okay, I understand all this. And I don't mean I don't understand what's coming, but whatever happened to this part? Like, they leave he leaves a couple of good mysteries that I want to see where they, you know, if they explore it with Earth 2.
And see, and again, Earth 2 is a book that I stopped getting as well, so, yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I think maybe I read way too much, but I really liked Earth 2 under James Robinson.
Yes, you do read a lot, but I read a lot too. It's just, I'm glad that we read a lot of different stuff.
Well, that's, we're not, you know, in totally in lockstep on everything.
No, goodness no. So I think that covers everything from this past week. What are you most looking forward to coming out this week?
I have another giant week. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, you know, the villains books. I'm actually going to go with Lex Luthor's Action Comics by Charles Soule, because I want to see what he can do. I always loved the character of Lex Luthor, and I think he's done wrong often, but I like the whole aspect of what, you know, Luthor has become towards the end of the issue of the first Forever Evil. And I want to see if that, you know, this ties into it and everything. Could be really, really good.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, it's being written by Charles Soule. Is that correct?
That's what I said, yeah.
Okay, so because I got a little, I'm still behind on my books. I know the Zod book that came out was written by Greg Pak, and I have a feeling that's probably going to tie into his run on Action Comics when that starts in a month or two. Whereas this being written by Charles Soule, I have a feeling that it's probably going to tie into his upcoming Superman Wonder Woman stuff.
Right, which I'm looking forward to, too.
Right, and him being one of those writers that I'm going to check out his stuff regardless, I'm getting this, but this is not the one I'm most looking forward to.
Oh, okay.
I thought we were going to cross over, and I'm actually kind of surprised that we didn't, because the one I'm most looking forward to coming out this week is Thor God of Thunder number 13, the beginning of the new story arc, with Malekith returning as a villain in the Thor universe, just in time for the Thor movie.
Mm-hmm. Shocking the way they did that. We never would have seen that coming.
So yeah, I've been loving Thor. I didn't get a chance to talk to my wife. She just got a chance to finish reading issue 12, and I wanted to have an in-depth discussion on her thoughts on it, because it was such a great issue. And I'm excited for the new story arc, and I hope with it tying in and having at the very least the same villain that's going to be in the upcoming movie, that a lot of people will check this book out for the first time.
Yes. You know, the movie gets people in the door at the comic shops.
I certainly hope so in this case, because this is a book that deserves a lot more people reading it, because it is awesome.
Yes.
So I think that covers what we are looking forward to coming out this week. I just need to grab your notes on Lex Luthor for myself. And, of course, if you're looking for any information, the constant changes of creators and who's doing your favorite, whatchamacallit, in the New 52 and all these villains books that you can't tell who's writing stuff without a scorecard, you can always follow the Weekly Long Box on Twitter, and we'll keep you up to date with the most current and bestest information there. If you want to know how the Raiders are doing this season, I understand they won a game.
That's right. They beat the second best team in the NFL, or second worst team in the NFL, beat the worst team in the NFL. Raiders beat Jaguars. Yay!
You can follow Todd on Twitter, and that's at Roker the Joker, R-O-W-K-E-R, the Joker. And I am at L.F. Chikarason. That's L-F-C-H-I-K-A-R-A-S-O-N. And you can always email the show at lfchikarason@ymail.com. We're still working out the kinks of getting a shared email address for the show that you can get in touch with us there, so both Todd and I can respond to you individually without knowing what the other hand is doing.
Yes, that's the best.
That is the best, when we're very confused and have no idea what's going on.
That's me. That's me most of the time.
I think that's both of us most of the time.
Not you, sir, but go ahead.
Twitter and this email is also the way that you can contribute to our weekly Twitter question. And this past week's Twitter question was, what is your favorite comic book universe? And there was a lot of interesting choices that we had from our listeners. Heather Hanskar of Hobbit Hottie on Twitter mentioned the Ultimate Universe. We talked about the Ultimate Universe earlier in the show. Maybe enjoy it while you can.
Yes.
I was interested to see so much independent stuff get mentioned. Joel Jarrett at The Unsound One on Twitter mentioned Jeff Smith's Universe for Bone. Cusack Clone on Twitter mentioned the Ultraverse. And I tell you, when Ultraverse was under its own imprint before Marvel picked it up, man, I love me some Ultraverse books.
I didn't really read any of the Ultraverse books.
Yeah, I was a big Prime fan, you know, when I was young. It had that awesome Norm Breyfogle art. Tom Gehrke mentioned the Valiant universe, and now's the time to be a Valiant fan because so much stuff is on sale, and it's really good with its most recent resurgence. We had a couple people, Mr. Senior, MRSR Living on Twitter, and Michael Jennings at the confusing Twitter hag, at least for me, MC underscore C Jennings, both mentioned, you know, more or less whatever universe Brian K. Vaughan is fooling around with, and the universe that Saga takes place in is a pretty cool universe.
Yes, definitely. You can't beat Sagas.
But most people, very little Marvel. Like I said, outside of Heather mentioning the Ultimate Marvel universe, most of it was DC. A lot of people mentioning pre-crisis DC. A couple people, Michael Lee Carter, Urban Remnant on Twitter, specifically mentioning that post-crisis, pre-Zero Hour era of the DC universe. And that's my time of DC too, man. You know, I started reading a lot more DC in like 1990, and I think Zero Hour is 94, so I'm right with you.
Mm-hmm.
In there. But that wasn't my favorite.
That's what I was going to ask.
Was not my favorite. I'll let you go with your favorite first.
My favorite, and I didn't see it on there, is probably the shared pre-New 52 Vertigo universe.
Oh, okay.
With Sandman, Hellblazer, you know, like a lot of the stuff that was going on with those books right there. And technically, you know, they did cross over and stuff like that. That, to me, was the best of the best.
Now, this is how simpatico you and I are. When I thought of this, that was my choice. That's what I had written down as my choice, but it had a little question mark next to it because I wasn't 100% sure. I thought I can maybe, you know, maybe I'll think of something different, but right now that's the one that's the forerunner, and something else beat it. And it was something that one of our longtime listeners actually mentioned, Mike Schaefer on Twitter, and this is a great choice. And it is it's very close to yours, but the opposite side of the coin, if you will. It's the shared DC animated universe.
Which was my second choice, honestly.
There you go.
Honestly? So, but go ahead.
No, I was going to say, because, you know, I love me that, you know, when everything started to come together in Justice League, like, you know, because Superman and Batman had their little bit of a crossover and they had a similar design, but not a ton of crossover. I think one or two crossovers, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But then a lot of the same characters, like Flash appears in both, and like all these different characters start appearing in both. And then when the Justice League cartoon comes in, and then the Batman Beyond cartoon comes in, and they start tying everything together, you see it as this one greater giant piece of storytelling, and it's so awesome. And there was a period of time where every time Justice League Unlimited would be on, I would get finished watching an episode, and I would just shake my head and be like, why can't the comics be like this? Why can't all of DC be like this?
It was so good. I mean, I all the episodes, I mean, and they were all good. Whether or not you liked them as much as the other one, I'm with you. From the Batman to the Superman to the Batman Beyond to the Justice League, then Justice League Unlimited, it was all amazing. And like you said, it all tied in, and I got to see a great perfect incarnations of every character. There was no where I went, that was just god-awful. And that's tough. That's really tough. And, you know, the Tim and Dini, you know, just legendary. And I'm almost kind of glad that it's gone in a way that, like, you know, if they're not going to do it and stuff like that, that it could get, you know, just it could get worse. It ended on such a high note that I'm always like, I want to see more. I wish they'd go back, but I don't. It's one of those we talked about, Astro City. I just don't see it happening, coming back to that universe and being good.
Now, I will say this. It was a little bit different, but the Young Justice cartoon was close. It kind of paid homage to a lot of that stuff. But it wasn't 100% exactly like the team of the Justice League. You know, who was on the Teen Titans at the time, and like the ages of characters were a little flopped. But the run of Young Justice was very underrated. I think that's going to be one of those shows that, like, maybe like in 5 or 6 years, people are going to hopefully rediscover and give it its due, and kind of not put it on the like put it on a similar level as the Justice League previous shared universe, the JLU, the Batman animated series, Superman animated series, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I could do a whole episode someday on just the Bruce Tim Dini universe. Would be, you know, it's that good.
Oh yeah. I know you're not a podcast person, but Kevin Smith has one of on one of his 4,000 podcasts, he has one called Fat Man on Batman, and he has tons and tons of people who worked on it, from Dini himself to Bruce Timm to people who, you know, wrote on. I think Kyle Higgins, actually, wrote on some of the Batman Beyond stuff, or he was a big Batman Beyond person. Now he's writing the Batman Beyond stuff right now. But there's a lot of, like, behind-the-scenes sort of stuff and, like, stuff they tried to do with the stories and couldn't do and stuff that they were able to sneak in and, like, you know, where they had to change things. It's really interesting if that's the sort of – if that's your era of – you know, if that's your favorite universe, go check out those podcasts from those creators.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So I think that puts a bow on this portion of the show. We do have a Twitter question for next week, do we not, sir?
Yes, we do. We have done who was your favorite sidekick character, but I don't think we've done who was your favorite child character.
Oh, okay.
Because technically a lot of the child characters aren't, you know, sidekicks. Like, you technically, if you wanted to say the teenage Spider-Man was your favorite, he was never a sidekick. So I'm going to go with your favorite, you know, under 18 favorite character, child.
Your favorite child star in the comic book universe.
Yes.
All right. All right. I gotcha. Can I choose two?
If they're twins, yes.
I was going to say, can it be Wendy and Marvin?
Yes.
I can't just pick one.
But who can, Leonard? Just pick one.
We were watching some stuff, and we'll close out the show with this. One of the things that the baby watches outside of his surprise egg videos and toy unboxing videos that he loves, he also loves watching the opening credit sequences to all the old cartoons from the 60s and 70s and 80s and so forth.
Right.
And there was the one we were watching the other day with Super Friends where it has Wendy and Marvin and the Wonder Dog as well. And I don't think my wife had ever seen it before. And I just she was just shaking her head in disgust when those characters came up. And that was the first time I think she had ever been introduced to them. And it was just an immediate sense of, like, just bile and disgust in seeing them.
There's no mistaking what they were doing with those when they show up.
Oh, boy.
That's corporate there.
And I will say this, though. There was a lot of Aquaman. Like, Aquaman got tons and tons of, like, FaceTime in those shows, you know, going all the way back to the 60s. Like, there was a time where they repackaged it as the Superman Aquaman Adventure Hour.
Oh, yeah. That is how my brother became one of the giant Aquaman fans, like, outside of comics. Never read an Aquaman comic in his life, but loves all those cartoons. And if anybody says a bad word about comics, he'll cut them with a broken beer bottle or about Aquaman. So he's one of those defenders of Aquaman. So yeah, he got a lot of FaceTime in cartoons.
Yeah. I was very surprised to see him get that much love and translate into so much hate today.
Yes. I'm with you.
So that's a good question. Just throw the hashtag GrizzWLQ on there so I can track them all down, compile them all up, and we will talk about that and so much more right here on next week's show. Now, we're getting closer and closer to the 100th episode, and we do have a really super cool giveaway. We just have to figure out how we're going to get that into your hands. Have you had any more thoughts on that, Todd?
I was thinking, but you know, I'm not good at thinking, so... But we'll discuss.
I think once we head to the shop later today, maybe we'll have some discussion about it there.
Yes, we'll have to definitely hammer some stuff out.
Yes, I'm very intrigued to see where this is all going to go. I'm excited. And hopefully you'll all be here along with us as we soldier on toward episode 100. And for episode 96, this is Leonard closing out the show for Todd. And we will catch you all here next week.